Tonight she has an extraordinary report for us. Intelligence Officer Scott Jones on his knowledge of UFO events in Russia and China. Here she is from Philadelphia, Linda Moulton Howe.
Thanks, Whitley. This past weekend at the X Conference in Gaithersburg, Maryland, the focus was on American government knowledge of an extraterrestrial presence on Earth and the cover-up. There has been a policy of silence and denial about ETs and advanced technologies in the interest of national security since at least the presidency of Harry S. Truman in the 1940s. One of the speakers was C.B. Scott Jones, who worked in U.S. naval intelligence in the 1960s to the 1970s. Later, from 1985 until 1991, Scott worked as a special assistant for U.S. Senator Claiborne Pell, then chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Scott's goal was to find out what other governments and scientists knew about the UFO phenomenon and report back to Senator Pell. At the top of his research list were the Soviet Union and China, and the implied knowledge of German rocket scientist Dr. Wernher von Braun. Dr. von Braun began his work in the United States after World War II under Project Paperclip, in which German rocket experts were brought to the United States to create a space rocket program similar to what they had been doing in Peenemünde, Germany. Their base of operations here was White Sands Missile Range near Roswell, New Mexico. Dr. von Braun served as the first director of the Marshall Space Flight Center from 1960 to 1970. He was most noted for directing the development of the giant Saturn V rocket that carried men to the moon for the first time in 1969. Scott Jones thinks that Dr. Wernher von Braun not only knew about the extraterrestrial presence and rapidly flying disks over their rocket experiments, but that Dr. von Braun seemed to have insider knowledge about how the ET presence might be manipulated and used by the United States government.
We absolutely know that our country, the United States, has a determined policy of secrecy, silence, denial, and disinformation on this. And so the big question for me and for many others is why?
Isn't that why a focus on Wernher von Braun going back into the 1940s and Project Paperclip in the United States is really important? Because he seemed to provide some insights about why this government might perpetuate a policy of silence about a subject that he knew for a fact that we were dealing with something that fell into the non-human category.
Yeah, the basis for the Wernher von Braun comment, and that's about 20 years ago. This is after he had been in the country for a long time and actually was in the twilight of his life. He was a dying person. And a protege that he had selected, Carol Rosen, in an interview has given us this information. He told Carol that he had been in meetings in which the strategy, the corporate strategy, and it alleged or suggested that it wasn't just his corporation, which was Fairchild, but a conglomerate, was this, that, you know, it is essential to keep the pump, the income pump for the industrial complex, military-industrial complex, primed and going, is to make sure that we have adequate enemies. And he ticked off to Carol, according to what she has said, that essentially here's the list. Watch for this. First, the Soviet Union, but that will collapse. And then terrorism and crazies in other countries. Then asteroids. And then extraterrestrials, which is, you know, an extraordinary list. And I must say that, on reflection, that everything has been mentioned as a potential enemy or threat by the United States, except extraterrestrials to this point.
in the work that you did with Senator Claiborne Pell, where you were assigned to explore the world to find out what was going on with research and other governments' efforts to understand whatever this phenomena is. Did you find that there were other countries, maybe China, Russia, France, who were ready to disclose what they knew, and the United States was the only obstacle between their saying to the world public, we know we're not alone?
That intrigued me, what I ran into. First of all, when I first went into the Soviet Union, this was before their bloodless revolution, the scientists that I dealt with and the research directors knew that they were going to have a revolution. And they literally offered me stacks of their classified reports, and we would have huge stacks of their reports over years of their official government involvement. The funding for that came from the Ministry of Defense and their intelligence community, the KGB and the GRU, and they identified their sources of funding to me. And because they were interested in, and I think for the obvious reasons, first of all, to ascertain, was this something coming from NATO, from the United States? Were these things that were penetrating their airspace a threat, still another threat to their national security and a provocation? And I think they very quickly realized that they could determine the difference between a U-2 and naval aircraft penetrating their borders, and then later on other aircraft, and then the satellites when they came online, and the U-2s, or rather the ETs and the UFOs that came over. What they did not know, and because I asked him, I said, well, what do you think is the motivation? What is the intent of these intrusions, not just to your country, but around the world? And they confessed they had no idea of what the intention was.
But it underscores that this is a global phenomenon, that it is being seen by thousands of people around the planet on an ongoing basis in every country. And can you describe what you learned from what you called the bear of a scientist in Russia?
Yeah, that was interesting. Since I was working for Senator Pell, who was then the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, that gave me entree to places around the world. And the title that he had given me was Special Assistant, and no one ever asked what that really meant, and which was fine. But they made some their own assumptions as to what the Special Assistant of the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was. And so perhaps they were overgenerous in sharing things, but I certainly appreciate it, whatever their expectations were. I was frequently used as a messenger boy in every country I went in because they knew of my relationship with Senator Pell. And the Russians less than the Chinese. The Chinese did it repeatedly. But if they had a heartburn that they wanted eased, they would say, look, when you get back to Washington, we want you to tell Senator Pell this, and let's clean this up or have that stop or get this going. And, of course, that was easy for me to say, of course, I'll be glad to do this. And that kept the relationship warm and going. Well, I was in the Institute of Theoretical Problems, and the director told me late one afternoon, he said, tomorrow, there's going to be something new to the agenda. They said a very senior scientist, a hero of the Soviet Union, wants to meet with you. And I said, I asked, well, what does he want to meet about? Now, we'd been meeting, I think, for 2 days on the subject of UFOs at that time. And he said, well, he will tell you. Well, when he came in, he was a huge man. And when he swept into the room, his presence just took over, and people, pulled back from him. And I held my ground best I could, and he got right up in my face, and it was a finger-pointing monologue on his point. And he was telling me that the ballistic anti-ballistic missile treaty that had just been completed was completely unfair, and our insistence on the that the Soviet Union to dissemble a large phased array radar was not justified. And he said this is an important radar, and it is technically not in violation. I said, well, I can imagine what you're upset as a scientist, and I imagine the military is upset because your diplomats gave it away. And he agreed with that. And so I asked him, I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to tell Senator Pell how unfair and unnecessary and wrong this is. Well, I did that when I got back to Washington. I told my boss, and he said, well, let's go to the committee. So I told the Soviet experts on the committee about this, and they just shrugged and said, well, you know, don't know what he was so mad about. Well, you know, it was sometime later. Actually, I was reviewing my notes. I was, you know, I try to take notes when I'm there because so much is going on. And I thought it would be poor form to have a tape recorder, so I would take notes, actually scribble when I did. So I was reviewing the notes, and while I had hired a good technical translator, and I was confident that he was as good as he was advertised to be, that I had missed it, that the translation, either I had missed what he had said, or he had missed something. And I think the message from this hero of the Soviet Union, I mean, you put it together, he knew where I was, and he knew what we'd been talking about for 2 days.
UFOs.
That's right. And so I don't think he came principally to talk about a phased array radar in any other context other than UFOs. And I think what the translation should have been, and either wasn't or I missed it, was that this radar is important to us, the Soviet Union and the United States.
Scott Jones learned a surprising political fact about international UFO disclosures when he was in China. More about that after this break. This is Linda Moulton Howe, reporter and editor of EarthFiles.com, reporting for Dreamland.
This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're back with Linda Moulton Howe.
Scott Jones realized that the Soviet scientists' plea to have U.S. Senator Claiborne Pell keep that Soviet phased array radar going was because they were using the radar to track UFOs.
If I'd had my wits about me, I should have asked, and, you know, what is the frequency of this radar picking up UFOs, you know? And I think he would have then answered the question. He assumed that, I think too much, that, first of all, I was that smart that I would have figured it out, and that I'm sure he would have dialogued with me if I'd brought that up.
Are we tracking certain frequencies that we know are linked to very specific kinds of extraterrestrial aerial craft?
You know, Linda, I don't know that, you know, technically where we are or not. If, in fact, we have, if they emanate on a frequency spectrum that we can monitor, the answer certainly must be yes. I suspect that there may be frequencies in spectrums that we do not recognize. It may be a dimensional thing. I don't think that we know how to check for frequencies in this dimension and then shift to another dimension to check for frequencies there.
Now, what was the most provocative information that you ran into in China?
The Chinese can be very direct. Bless them for that. They, for example, just simply told me, he said, you know, it's an outrageous and transparent lie that you come to China and allege that you don't know what your own country is doing in these fields. Essentially, how dare you go to our people in the military attaché and our embassy in Washington and say you would like to meet senior people in the following academies and institutes who are doing the important research in UFOs and in psychic phenomena, unless you have a responsibility and knowledge of what your own country is doing with it. I was never able to convince them that I was not among the unanointed. And that kept me away from their most senior people, who I knew and identified. But they simply would not let me get to them. But I guess the important thing with the Chinese came from a member of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And in a casual moment, he lamented how sad he was that the exchange of information between our countries on this subject, on UFOs, had stopped. And I said, I am not familiar of that exchange. What additional details? And then I think he realized that he should not have said what he did. And he sort of mumbled his way out of it, but I got no other details. Now, the reason this is important is that I think it has been somewhat validated by the extraordinary 1999 report that came out of France, in which they say in the report, in one part of it, that there is essentially the allegation that there is a special relationship between the United States and whatever this phenomena is. And the Chinese, when they told me over and over again of the amount of evidence that they have, that they, from which they conclude that the ET phenomena is real in the sense that there are real tangible craft penetrating their airspace, that issue is essentially settled with them. And I said, well, this being the case, why don't you make a public announcement? Tell the world about this reality. And there was a short and embarrassed silence. And he said, China will be a quick second after the United States makes the announcement, which again suggests that there is a belief or an understanding that the responsibility for the first announcement comes from the United States. And I can't understand this, Linda. I do not know, you know, what the basis of this is.
In his efforts to get more truth about the UFO puzzle, Scott Jones hired a remote viewing group that had originally trained in a classified defense intelligence program and later sold remote viewing as an investigative tool in the civilian world. Scott wanted to learn more about the 1908 explosion above the ground in Tunguska, Siberia, Russia, that incinerated trees in an 18-mile diameter circle around ground zero, and whatever blew up was so strong. Beyond the 18-mile burn circle, thousands of trees were knocked down over a 25-mile radius. That means about 50 miles diameter circle was burned and knocked down. If that explosion had occurred over a populated city, the effect would have been catastrophic for all the people living there. To date, the most common hypothesis has been that a large meteorite blew up above Tunguska in 1908. But when Scott Jones had the remote viewers, led by Ed Dames, concentrate on that historic event, they got a different answer.
Three out of the five came up with UFOs. And they feel that it was, at least three of them, as I recall, was a UFO event and a ship in trouble. And, in fact, there was an explosion, and the explosion that we called the Tunguska was perhaps the demise of a ship that was having real technical difficulties. So, you know, that is, you know, that's as close that now I'm beginning to seriously consider that the ships that we have been observed and the Roswell event, that this was a time vehicle, I mean, a time travel vehicle. If you put it in a different context and say this is part of a time travel vehicle, what else can we learn from the same things that have been exploited already?
And could we in the United States government learn how to operate that technology and literally go backwards or forwards in time?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's the direction is bidirectional or not. You know, I think I heard at this conference that it's only back in time, but I don't know, just a comment. Well, if that's the case, then the travelers that are coming here are coming from our future. And, of course, that brings a great potential. If it's a future that is future in all areas, they are more technologically advanced, more psychologically, emotionally, spiritually advanced, then they truly have some gifts to share with us.
Scott Jones is now in his early 70s and is devoting most of his time these days to a peace and emergency action coalition for Earth, which is PEACE, a foundation that has come into being in the last year, and this grew out of his Human Potential Foundation that he put together in 1989 with the goal that whether he knew what the agenda of the extraterrestrial phenomena was or not, that he was convinced that we as a human family had to make peace a priority. And he and I talked to some extent about that at this conference and the issue of time travel and accessing the future. He really does think, from whatever exposures he's had in his career, that time travel technology is now a part of the equation when it comes to trying to deal with whatever this non-human intelligence is and its technologies. And this goes to a very interesting conversation I had with Bill Hamilton about time travel technology, as he has learned from not only Dan Burrish, the microbiologist at Area 51, but from other sources in his efforts to understand what the government knows and is covering up. And this is Project Looking Glass. And Bill told me that Project Looking Glass, as he understands it, relates to a piece of technology that was given, and he says, to the presence of Harry Truman, the presidency of Harry Truman, and that it was a sphere that could access other dimensions and had at least six portals. Quote, one of the portals would open up a view of the future. That was the first one they were able to open up, and they saw things they could not understand. And what they saw, I was told, was fire, fire, fire everywhere, like the earth was burning up, and they could not comprehend that, unquote. We are at a time when we are all worried about what could be the next Y2K, and that's that year 2012. Is it a transition? Is it a nuclear war? Is it a natural cosmic event? None of us know yet, but everyone is talking about accessing time and something dangerous up ahead having to do with that year. And I wonder, Whitley, what our government knows and is still covering up.
Well, I'm always very skeptical of stories like that. It just sounds so extremely improbable. I think the most...
Meaning Project Looking Glass?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, actually. I've heard Scott Jones talk about these things before, and I don't know what exactly he is. Is he an intelligence agent who is out there trying to create the impression that the government knows more about these things than they do, so that if they show up, we will turn to the government for support? Or is he simply telling the truth, in which case it's a pretty darn surprising one, or not? I've never been able to figure him out. I know the guy. I've spent some time with him, and it's still very difficult to understand. The one thing that I believe, wasn't it Bill Hamilton, or did we talk about this last week or not? I'm not sure. But that a dissected human body was found.
Yeah, from the Majestic 12 document.
Right, yeah, we did talk about that.
Landing Zone 1 bodies.
And that strikes me as a very, very good reason to do two things. One is to keep the thing secret, and two is to try to figure out how to control it in some way, any way possible. And if you look at the way the thing has unfolded over the years, with the knowledge that we have of possible other cases like that, more recent ones, and the way government secrecy has unfolded and the strange, like NASA STS mission 8047, where something seems to, some kind of a ray seems to come up from the ground. It in fact came up from Australia near the U.S. Pine Gap facility, according to a gentleman who worked on the video for me, what he said, and that maybe what we've been doing is trying to develop a way to gain some control over something that's really extremely creepy and inexplicable.
Well, you know, the other facet here is the Dan Burrish point of view that he was briefed and said that we are dealing with us from the future, time travelers coming back trying to survive some physical, terrible physical ailment.
Well, that might explain the Roswell so-called alien footage, those strange-looking sort of human beings who are obviously genetically challenged big time.
Right.
Maybe what that is a warning from the future.
Well, exactly. And how interesting if it is that Wernher von Braun, who had so much exposure to everything that was going on in Germany and the United States, would at the very end of his life say that the United States needed an enemies list to keep the economic pump going, and that on that list, in addition to asteroids, terrorists, and the Soviet Union, which would collapse, would be extraterrestrials. And therefore, it makes one sort of mistrustful of any stated agenda, and how in the world will we ever know what the truth is?
Well, Linda, thanks very much for an incredibly provocative report. And, you know, they've been saying for a while the truth is out there. And if anyone's going to find it, it's going to be you. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland.